Welcome to the Self-Publishing School Podcast. This is the podcast to listen to if you're an aspiring writer or an author who wants to be more successful. On this show, you'll learn how to write and launch a book successfully, all from the top authors and people just like you who are doing it at the highest level. I'm your host, Chandler Volt, the founder of Self-Publishing School, the author of the book called Published, and the CEO of selfpublishing.com. For free training on how to publish a book that sells 10,000 copies, go to selfpublishing.com/free training. Hey, Chandler Bolt here, and joining me today is Anthony Morrison. Anthony is an American entrepreneur and a self-help author. He's known for his television infomercial series, at least maybe in the book world, maybe you've seen that. He's known for a bunch of things, a bunch of successful online businesses, webinar software, all that stuff. But he's got an infomercial series with Mark Victor Hansen that's been running since 2009. He's written multiple books, including a book called The Hidden Millionaire, 12 Principles to Uncovering the Entrepreneur in You. He sold over 1 million copies of some of his books. So we're going to unpack that today. So we're going to talk a little bit about, I think we've only maybe talked about infomercials one other time, and that was Dean Graziosi. But even just the concept of turning your book into a TV series or kind of a video content and using that kind of other outside the box ways to market and sell books. So that's what we're going to be talking about. Anthony, great to have you here.
Hey man, thank you for having me. Excited to talk about some of this stuff with you.
So, hey, take me back. Why did you write your first book?
Yeah, man, it's so long ago. I tell you why, though. It's kind of the reason why I continue to do, you know, what I do today, which is education and teaching people how to build their business. When I was in college, I started my first business. Started it as an affiliate, just doing affiliate marketing, you know, basic stuff. But it was, you know, 15 years ago, so this was like kind of new age, and nobody really knew anything about it. And I was doing it at such a high level, almost by accident, right? That I had people that started asking me how to do it. My college roommate or college friend asked me how to do it. I showed him how to do it. He made over $1 million. My brother asked me how to do it. He, you know, I showed him, he made over $1 million. And this was a kid that was literally diagnosed, you know, ADHD, had to have special teachers, you know, told that he wasn't gonna, you know, ever do anything, failing, all this stuff. And here he is making $1 million. And so I wanted to get the message out, right? I mean, that was what I really wanted to do. I was like, man, I've stumbled upon something that works, and everybody I had taught was succeeding, you know, and at really high levels for young people. And so I wanted to get the message out, and I was like, man, what's the fastest way to do this? And I called QVC, and I said, hey, I've got this thing. I want to come on, and I want to share it, and I want to sell it, and I'm going to write a book about it, and I'm going to show people how to do it. Dude, they just laughed at me and hung up. And they're like, yeah, no, I'm not doing that. I'm like, God. So, you know, that's when I was like, all right, well, maybe I need to do this myself. And so I sat down and I wrote two books. The Hidden Millionaire was the first one. It's more of, you know, the principles that I had really learned as I kind of look back on, you know, the growth that I had, the success that I had at a, you know, at a young age, you know, what kind of, in every situation, what did I rely on, right, to be able to get to where I was? And there were really 12 things that stood out to me that I kept seeing repetitively throughout, you know, my entrepreneurship. And so I wrote that book to kind of teach people the right mindset. And then I wrote another book called Advertising Profits from Home. And that was teaching people how to advertise other people's products, right? And that, of course, was affiliate marketing. And so it was kind of a both, you know, kind of a package deal where it's like, hey, you need to learn the things that actually work, but you also need to learn how to think the right way, how to react the right way, how to make the right decisions in the tough situations that no doubt we all end up in as entrepreneurs. And so that's kind of how I ended up on this crazy path. You mentioned Dean Graziosi. It's kind of funny. So when I went to film, I wanted to film my first infomercial, and I filmed one in Mississippi, which is where I just like small budget, just, I had never done this before. I was just kind of figuring it out, you know, went and hired this broadcasting company. We filmed it and it did great, but I didn't really know a whole lot about the machine that you needed to make an infomercial work. And so one of my friends said, hey, there's this guy, Dean Graziosi, you might have heard of him. He's done all these TV shows. Why don't you go meet with him? So I did. I filmed my infomercial with Mark Hansen in Dean's studio, and off we went. So it was, it worked out really well for us.
So you get laughed off the phone from QVC. You say, hey, I'm going to go write these books myself. You write two books, one on the mindset, one on kind of the playbook on how to implement it, and then circle back to kind of doing the infomercial yourself. I want to dive into how you created the first infomercial, like lessons learned, all that stuff. But before that, which of those two books has sold better and why?
You know, so on television, we sold them both, right? So everybody, and they both were actual sales. So on TV, we offered the advertising profits from advertising profits from home book. And then if you wanted to add the Hidden Millionaire book on, you could. I think overall, out of all the orders that we've had from television, like 98.7% or so bought the Hidden Millionaire also, and they had to pay for it. What, you know, so they're buying both books. So it was like they wanted to learn the actual techniques, right, that we were implementing, but they also wanted to learn how to think like an entrepreneur, how to change their mindset, shift their ways, you know, change how they react in certain situations and stuff like that. So it was interesting to see that people wanted to make the money, but they also wanted to learn how to think the right way and think like an entrepreneur so they could grow. Post television show, as we just kind of get to where it's like everything's online and we make a lot of sales of our books online, the Hidden Millionaire has outsold the other one by a long shot. Of course, you know, advertising profits from home at this point obviously is dated, right? I mean, affiliate marketing has changed an awful lot. But the one thing that doesn't change is, you know, that kind of in the self-help world, right? The things that I taught people 10 years ago when I had that show running, or when I first started that show, still apply today. You know, the stuff that's in the Hidden Millionaire is something that transcends time. I mean, it doesn't matter what the date is, those things still matter. And those principles still apply.
And so, anything else, because I want to go back to the infomercial in just a second, anything else you would attribute to why? Because it's so interesting that the primary hook for the infomercial was one book and then 98% carry on with the second book. But then since then, the other books sold better. Anything else you can point to that's why that's books maybe had a longer tail post infomercial?
I mean, I think that people, I think a couple of things. Number one, I think people love a story. Right. I mean, there's a lot of people that want to read and they want to read a story. They want to be taken on a ride, on a journey. Right. It's as much, you know, I think it's as much entertainment as it is education. Right. Reading the advertising profits from home book is like reading your math workbook in college. Right. Like in high school. I don't think anybody just goes home. It's Saturday. I think I'm going to kick back and read my math book. Right. The math book taught you how to add and subtract, right? These are like basic skills that we all need to understand and know, but nobody really enjoyed reading their math books, right? Whereas, you know, you have your reading class that's teaching you, you know, history and literature, and you have to read these novels and things, and people would kick back and read that on a Saturday, read that on a Sunday, whatever. It's because it's more of a story, a journey, right? That you go on. And I think that's kind of what people like about the Hidden Millionaire. If you look on like Amazon and places like that, where they resell them constantly, you'll see that a lot of people, they learn from my story. And that's really what it is. It is my story kind of at, I think I was 26 or so when I wrote that. And I was actually just looking back at like the last maybe 3 to 4 years of my life. I haven't written the second. We're actually working on an updated version that's now looking back at like 12 years, you know, of doing this. And, but I think people just like the story, you know, I think they like the story. And I also think that with social media and with the way that people interact now is different than it was even 10, 11 years ago when I first wrote those books and released them, people didn't rely on social media quite as much. And I think now more than ever, people realize that in order to succeed in business and succeed as an entrepreneur, it's not only that you need to know how to click this and click that. It's that you really need to know how to live like one, right? I didn't wear it for this because I'm like, okay, well, Chandler may not appreciate that, but I always wear this chain that says self-made on it. I mean, it's just this big, gaudy looking diamond self-made chain. Most people immediately hate me for it. But then others, you know, they ask me why I wear it. And I think it's kind of a testament to where people's mindset is now and what's most important. And that is that so many people are working from home now, right? And that's kind of like when you think of entrepreneurship, you almost the first thing you think about is I can work from anywhere, right? Used to, it's like I can start a McDonald's. That's not how it is anymore. It's I can work from anywhere. And in order to do that, you really have to make yourself, right? You have to make yourself do the things you need to do to be successful. And that's really my definition anyway of self-made is that, you know, I wake up, I think I told you, I'm here in my beach house and, you know, I could be on the beach or I could be where I'm at right now, you know, talking about what I do, working, these types of things. And that's self-made. I make myself do it. And I think people need to learn that and they want to learn that and they realize they need that discipline in those, in that education, you know?
When it takes discipline to have that much freedom, the dichotomy, right? So let's go back to the infomercial piece. I have so many questions. So you did the first one you said on a small budget and filmed it in Mississippi, I think you said. Mm-hmm. How did you even know how to do it? Like how did you structure it? And then was it a one shot and done? How did you structure it in a way that converted and what did that look like?
You know, it's interesting. When you're young, much like an 8-year-old, if you give them an 8 or 9-year-old, if you give them a dirt bike, right? Motorcycle, dirt bike, and you give it to them, you let them jump on it. They have no fear. They just take off, you know? If you're 30 and you've had friends that have had motorcycle accidents or you've seen it, whatever, you know, you're a little scared when you get on your reserve, right? You may never reach your peak potential. You may never go 200 miles an hour and race and all this stuff because you have the fear factor that limits you. When you're younger, you don't. I was, you know, in my early 20s, I didn't know any, you know, I knew nothing about an infomercial. I didn't know that, you know, most of them failed. I didn't know that most people never get a shot to even do one. You know, I didn't know anything about them. I just said, I've got a great message. I've got a great, you know, I've found something that really works. I believed in it. And I said, I'm going to get this message out the fastest way I can and on the biggest scale that I can. And at the time, TV was the biggest, you know, you couldn't get any bigger. So it was like, hey, let's go all in, you know, go 0 to 100, go real quick. And that's what we did. We just went, bam. We just hit television. Yeah. We didn't even test nothing. We just went all out. and it worked. The structure though, you know, I was always, people always ask me this in all the interviews I've done since then, they always ask me like, who taught you how to sell? Who taught you the pitch? Who taught you the structure? And the reality is nobody. And I didn't, and the real irony is I never watched infomercials. So it isn't like I sat down and watched an infomercial. I just innately knew like, okay, I want to deliver this message. How would I deliver it if somebody was sitting in the room with
an actual human?
And we were just discussing it. And that's what I did. And if you watch my infomercial, one of the things that's, I think, the most powerful thing in that show is my story. It's not about, here's how much money I made. You know, back then you had a lot of people that were filming infomercials sitting at swimming pools. They had girls in bikinis and fast cars and all this stuff. I sat at a desk and talked to one person, you know, that was it. It was an interview, right? The story is what captivated people. The, you know, being really raw. And that's the thing that if you want to be able to sell, you have to be able to do is to kind of eliminate your ego for a minute and be extremely raw and vulnerable. There's when I filmed that show, I filmed it first time, it worked great. I went and filmed it again with Dean in his studio. And actually filmed it with a different interviewer than Mark Victor Hansen the first time. tested the show and it did amazing. Like the calls per thousand, that's how you kind of generate how many calls per $1,000 spent on media, was just through the roof. Everybody was excited. And then I found out the guy that interviewed me, he just wasn't somebody I wanted to be on television with, right? Let's put it that way. And I said, hey man, we're not going to run this show. And everybody, of course, was like, what the hell? You know, like, what are you talking about? We're not going to run this show. This is like a home run. I'm like, I'm not doing it. I need somebody that I feel comfortable having my face on national television with. So who better than the chicken soup for the soul? You know what I mean? Well, you can't get any better than Mark Victor Hansen. And so they're like, here, he will never find a problem with Mark Hansen. And so they brought Mark in and we shot it again. And everybody was just very worried that it was going to fail because Dean at their studio, they had started at the time producing, you know, for other people. And somebody told me, I don't know how many tons of infomercials had been filmed in there and they all failed except Dean's. Right. And so here I come, you know, this little kid from Mississippi with this internet idea. And I filmed it once and it killed it. I filmed it a second time and it killed it. And so what ended up happening was other people would come in to film and I would kind of consult with some of them, you know. And there was this guy that came in to film a show. It was on, you know, it was on real estate and it wasn't doing well. And they said, hey, Anthony, take a look at it. What do you think? And I said, man, I don't hear any like emotion. I don't hear any story. It's not believable. And I sat down and I talked to this guy, and this is important if you want to sell, especially books, because books are stories, right? People buy books because they want to read about you. They like you. They identify with you. You know, this guy comes in and I put him in the green room. Like, hey man, tell me your story. Like, tell me how did you grow up? You know, he's like, man, I grew up really poor. My parents were poor. There were a lot of kids. We actually slept in a garage, and it was, he's like, I remember how it felt in the, you know, when it was cold, the winter season, like the air would blow through the garage doors and my feet were always cold. Like, we only had one bathroom for a house of five or six. So every morning I had to wake up hours and hours early just to get a shower before school. Then I had to walk to school. Like, if you listen to this dude's story and then you see him in a suit and a tie and, you know, talking about he's made millions of dollars, like you can identify with where he's been and where he's at. When he got out on the show, he's like, yeah, I grew up in a middle-class family. You know, we didn't have a whole lot, but we were happy. I'm like, what? Like, that, there's no, like, you don't bring people into your story when you eliminate 99% of it, right? Of who you are and where you came from. And I think that's the real key to succeeding on television is telling your, you know, your true story and letting people that identify with it truly, you know, be brought into
it. That's great. So tell your story. Don't be, don't skip past the tough parts.
The details.
Speak with emotion. Talk like you're actually speaking to one person and not like you're this big personality on TV. I think those are a lot of the fundamentals. Backing up just a little bit, how did you get Mark Victor Hansen to say yes? How do deals like that get structured?
You know, that was at the time, that was Dean and his team that did that.
Nice.
You know, they already had some connections, obviously. And ultimately, man, you can get deals like that by just simply offering, you know, I mean, look, at the end of the day, who doesn't want, at the height of our show, we're spending $500,000, I think, a week on media, and the number one infomercial in the country for years, who doesn't want that exposure, you know, and getting paid to do it. So, I mean, it was great, obviously, for Mark's brand too.
Yeah.
So when you're giving people a platform that large, it's, you know, it's a lot easier to get them to say yes.
And so how long was the infomercial? Where did it run? And what was the main call to actions? I mean, you talked about measuring calls per thousand. So I'm assuming it was getting people to call, but can you just kind of walk me through that?
Yeah. So the infomercial ran, I think, for 4 years. And then we pulled it down, and I actually filmed one for my brother, and had Forbes Riley interview him, and it was on social media and how to generate revenue with, you know, make money with your social media, long before influencers and Instagram and all that. So, I mean, we were doing this stuff many years before, and we ran his show for a couple of years. So we had a good 6-year run on television. You know, TV, you measure in terms of calls per $1,000 you spend. So your main call to action is to pick up the phone and call, right? I mean, that's the thing that you really want people to do. Even with the internet, you know, even how normalized it is now to just go buy something online. 10 years ago, it wasn't the way it is. It wasn't as adopted as it is today. But even with that, you really want people focused, because you've got them, you know, you might say hooked, paying attention to you, watching, listening, all of that. The best thing to do is have them call, because they get online and what do they start doing? Googling and searching and Facebooking and all this stuff. And you lose the message, right? And so we just had people call. We didn't even put a website up. It was just straight up call the number. And we try to measure calls per 1,000. So you're able to determine how many times the phone rings based on every $1,000 in media you spend. A winning show, a home run, will do 35 calls per 1,000. So for every $1,000 you spend, you need to make the phone ring 35 times. A decent show, one that you can make work with some tweaking and stuff on the back end, probably is in the 30 range. Anything under 30, you know, usually doesn't work.
Hey, Chandler Bolt here. I hope you're loving this episode so far. It's time to go from inspiration to implementation. All right, so if you've learned something, we want to help you implement what you've learned with your book. So what I want you to do right now is go to selfpublishing.com/schedule, book a publishing consultation with one of the experts on my team. We'll talk about your goals for your book, your dreams, your challenges, your next steps, and we'll start putting together a plan. All right, so go to selfpublishing.com/schedule, book a call with the team. Let's see how we can help with your book. It's time to implement.
Taking notes there. That's so interesting. And so 30 calls per 1,000. And how long is the segment? What
30 minutes.
Channels? And so 30 yeah, minute so, segment.
So it's 28:20. So it's 28 minutes in 20 seconds. And then you try to divide that into four, give or take, 4 7-minute segments, right? So even though it's just one show, you want to have your call to action every 7 minutes or so, right? Because people are not always dialing or, you know, tuning in at the beginning of the show. It's not Friends. They're not getting on there at 6 o'clock on, you know, like they're just channel surfing. So you want to have the key to winning on television is don't have a call to action up all the time, because when somebody lands on the show, you want them to feel like they're watching an interview. You want them to feel like they're watching a show, not a commercial. Right? Nobody wants to watch commercials. But then you want to also have the commercial segment where you're pitching your book frequently enough that you are able to actually convert people, because not everybody can watch a show for 30 minutes, right? So you really try to divide it into like 5 minutes of content, 2 minute pitch, 5 minutes of content, 2 minute pitch, you know, and continue going that way. We ran it everywhere, man. Like every channel you can think of, HGTV, the Food Network, CNBC, Fox. I mean, there's not a channel we didn't run on. you know, we ran everywhere.
And how did you test and then ultimately narrow which channels were kind of your core channels that you're running it on?
So for us, you know, when we really got to massive scale, we just ran it everywhere. There was no channel that we really stayed away from. In initial testing, you know, it's a lot like you would do with online marketing, right? We would give every channel, every station gets its own dubs and gets its own copy of the show, so we can track the phone number. So every if you watched it on ABC and then you watched it on HGTV, there's different phone numbers to call. And so that's how you track the calls coming in from each station. So it's a big process, because you're producing tons of tapes, constantly shipping the tapes to the different stations. I mean, it's a little bit of a process, but it creates a really big machine.
Yeah. That's so interesting. It's the pixel before there was a pixel is a separate phone number on the video. And so you're testing on a bunch of different channels. It's a 28:20, so 28 minute, 20 second
segment. You said it's structured in kind of 7-minute chunks, 5 minutes content, 2 minutes pitch, repeat. But then obviously the repeat is different content, I'm assuming. And then, you know, so then we're spending everywhere. 35 calls per thousand is kind of, that's a home run. Anything under 30 calls per $1,000 on spend, that's not great. Or it probably won't work. What was like, what was the average cost for a 30-minute segment? Like, how does that kind of pricing work? Do you remember?
Yeah, I don't know that there's necessarily an average cost because every station is different. If you get 30 minutes on HGTV at 8 p.m. at night, you're going to pay way more than 30 minutes on, you know, the CW network at 3 a.m. Right. what we did was we kind of bucked the trend. Most infomercials only ran late at night, 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock in the morning. We would run our infomercials all day on Saturday, all day on Sunday. I mean, I preempted, you know, the red carpet to the Oscars one time. So basically the people that were logged, like going to their like local Fox channel or whatever it was to watch the red carpet to the Oscars. We preempted it and bought the 30-minute segment. And so all the eyeballs hit us, right? Then you would, like, for instance, if you look at coming out of the local news, right? So the local Mississippi, our local news, the 10 o'clock news or whatever, you know, the 10:30 slot on ABC or NBC or whatever that local network is, you know, that's going to cost more because you have lead in eyeballs, right? It's like tons of people were already watching TV. They roll right into what you know, into your show and you have a chance to hook them. So the pricing is all over the place. So what what you're really looking to do is find how wide a net can you cast? Do you have to be like, you know, if you got a real estate infomercial, do you have to run it on HGTV and the DIY network, or can you make it work broad, right? And if you think about it, like local, like marketing now, you know, Facebook lets you really dial in specific audiences, or you can market broad. TV is broad, you know, unless you're just picking one or two channel, you know, if you have a cookbook, you can maybe market it on the Food Network, you know. But you know, and like I said, real estate has its own a couple of channels, but for the most part, it's a cross section of America that's watching ABC, the CW network, NBC, you know, I mean, it's, there's no specific person. And so you've really got to have an offer that appeals to a broad audience in order for it to really work well.
That makes sense. And so what's the call now? What is the offer? And then what's kind of the upsell sequence? You've already alluded to that a little bit. So like, how did you stack an offer that gets people to pick up the phone? What's the price point? And then what's the upsell sequence?
So I'm pretty sure our book was $19.95. And then it's $10 to ship it. And then when you get on the telephone, the first thing we did was we asked you if you wanted the Hidden Millionaire book for $10, right? So like, we'll throw it in. If you buy the book, we'll ship it to you for free. And like I said, most everybody took that. So your instant average order value is $40. You got a $20 book, $10 worth of shipping, and then another $10 book. So you're at $40. Our average order value on my show ended up being in the $70 range. So on average, the people that called in would spend $70. One of the most important things we did was we built a continuity program. So a monthly rebuild program, membership program. And at the time, everyone said, there's no way that you can charge more than $19 a month for this membership program. It just doesn't work. And from people that call in for infomercials won't buy it. I never really ever did anything based on what anybody else has ever done. I didn't watch an infomercial before I did it. I launched a seminar company that was in 5 states and 20 cities a week for almost a decade. Never went to a seminar when I did it. I just kind of made up what I was going to do. And so when I did this, I thought, why would I do what everybody else does? And so I charged $49.95, which is substantially more than the model, the typical model would allow. And that was the biggest key to our success, because we would have people that would call in and buy that at a 60% clip. So you can imagine 1 million people buy a book, 60% of them buy a $50 a month rebill. And we made them double opt into it. They said yes, and then they had to say yes again. So there's no trickery. There's no automatic, what is it called? Negative option, you know, we had to opt out of it or anything like that. It was all done very compliantly. And we got 60% of people to take it at $49.95. Our take rate didn't decrease at all from $50 or $20. And that made a huge difference, because on television, your typical ROAS is going to be under a one. So you're going to, you know, if you spend $500,000 this week on media, you're not typically going to make $500,000 back. Maybe you make back 400,000, and then you have to spend the money on the books and the shipping and the, you know, so you could easily be at, you know, a 70% return. So how do you make that other 150 grand back? Right. You know, where does that money come from? A lot of it would come from building up your membership platform and your, you know, the membership revenue. And so by, you know, almost tripling the cost, 2.5 times the cost, we were able to get up to scale a lot faster and stay there a lot longer than most people.
Yeah, that's interesting. And I'm kind of fast forwarding to today. I'm assuming you're not running these anymore and not running TV ads anymore. Why not? And what would it take for someone to be able to make it work kind of in today's market?
No, we have a massive studio that we built in Mississippi to film infomercials. We filmed a few in the last 5 years, some for Les Brown, Bob Proctor, a couple of other real estate guys.
You gotta be hungry.
Yeah, you gotta be hungry. I got so many videos of
Les. Oh gosh, I love Les Brown.
Hungry, man. Yelling it, you know? Such an awesome dude. And you know, we filmed a lot for other people. The reality is we just haven't written a book. You know, that's the biggest thing, is I haven't written, you know, I've got two or three ideas. One, we own unlocksuccess.com. And so we're writing a book on, you know, basically kind of the next book to the Hidden Millionaire, Unlock Success, like some more general approach to it. And then, you know, thinking through there's so many things I've done now. You know, it's almost like it was easier when I was 22. Like, I'd done this one thing and I knew I did it really well. It's like, let's write the book on that. You know, now it's like we've completely changed how people do automated webinars. We've done seminars at a high level, television at a high level, affiliate marketing at a high level, and $100 million in sales of our digital courses. What do you write on? You know what I mean? So I think for me, a lot of it is just mental block. Like, I want to go this direction or that direction with writing. And so that's really the only reason we haven't launched another show. There's nothing that stops anybody. In fact, right now, honestly, it's probably easier because there's less competition, because most people take the easiest path to the success that they want, right? It's the path of least resistance. It is not easy to be on television. It is much easier to have somebody run a Facebook ad for you, right? But because it's much easier, there's more competition. Television's got a little bigger threshold, you know, and barrier to entry because of just the knowledge that you have to acquire. But once you get there, it's a much easier machine to run, right? And so so I would venture to say that, you know, there's not volatility in it like there is with Facebook. You know, one day your Facebook ads are killing it. Tomorrow your Facebook ads suck. And the next day they're killing it. You know, whereas with television, it's very predictable. Once you dial in what it costs you to get a customer, you know, you can just scale your ad spend to the moon, and you're probably going to be in the same ballpark of, you know, customer acquisition cost.
That's cool. And really, really interesting and intriguing stuff, and cool to kind of come this full circle. Cause I think, you know, some people you might be watching or listening to this right now and be like, well, what in the world, like, I'm not going to do an infomercial. And so at minimum, you've got, now when you see them, you know what's going on and you understand the marketing behind that. But also, if you're doing webinars to sell or to promote your stuff, to grow your business, all that stuff, I mean, it is a very similar structure. And all of the stuff that Anthony just talked about applies to that, obviously. I think it's kind of cool to see it come full circle. You've got Webinar Fuel, your software that helps people run great webinars now. And it's like, that's come full circle. This is still a part of your life in a major way. So kind of final, we're right up at time here, but final question or two, what would be your parting piece of advice
for people who are about to write and publish their first book, knowing what you know now?
Oh gosh. You know, I would say, and this is something that I need to take my own advice on, right? Is you know, pick, I think what a lot of people do is they try to figure out how they're going to sell it before they write it, you know? And so they're always looking at, you know, funnels and whether it's webinars and all this stuff before they write the book. And here's what I found. I wrote my first book, had no clue how I was going to sell it. None. But once you've written it and once you've spent the time actually writing that book, you're a lot more motivated to figure out how to sell it than you are before you've ever, you know, done the first bit of work writing it. So the first thing I would say is write the book, right? That's the hardest part. Selling it is easy. You know, once you've written it, you'll also have a much greater depth to conversation when you talk about it, right? If I come to you and I say, hey, Chandler, you know, write this book, Unlock Success, and it's really cool, and I'll, you know, I'm not going to be able to sell you that book, but if I've already written it, then I know it in and out. I can just recall stories, memories, thoughts of where I was writing The Hidden Millionaire, what I was thinking, like all of these things, all of that comes out in your sales pitch, right? And in your message when you're trying to get somebody to buy this book from you. And so once you've written the book, that's when you focus on the marketing. And I've been down this path with so many people. I see so many people that are trying to focus on the marketing, and even these companies that help people with writing books, other ones, right? It's let's focus on the marketing and how we're going to build your marketing for it before we've ever written the book, you know? And I just think that's the backwards way of doing
100%.
It.
100%. Get your rough draft done and then apply marketing and sales skills and your personal story. Speak all the same things you said for infomercial, right? Speak to one person, share your story, all those things. Anthony, yep. This has been awesome, man. Where can people go to find out more about you, to get your books, the webinar software, really just find out more about you and what you're up to?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, look, obviously all on social media, you know, it's always just at Anthony Morrison. I got lucky. I got my name on all of them. So I got lucky there. And then, yeah, check out webinarfuel.com. I mean, that's, it's like the new age infomercial. It's like you can run an infomercial at any point in time. And when you automate a webinar, it's no different than automating running a television show. And with Webinar Fuel, like I told you before we went live, you know, we've changed the way automated webinars work, and they actually launch in software similar to Zoom, and it captivates attention much like the television does. And when people give you their attention, that means they listen to your message. And that's the only way you can sell them on your book, your product, or your service, is if they're paying attention and listening to your message. And so that's the reason why we use these automated webinars now, and anybody with a book should be doing one.
That's awesome. Webinarfuel.com. Anthony, thank you so much.
Hey man, thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for watching or listening to this episode of the Self-Publishing School Podcast. I know there's so many places that you can be spending your time. There's other podcasts that you could be listening to, YouTube channels that you'd be watching. So thank you so much. It means the world. Now, I want you to do three things right now if you found this episode. All right, number one, I don't know if you know this, but we've got a YouTube channel. It's a companion channel to this podcast. All the video versions of the episode are on the YouTube channel. So number one, subscribe to the YouTube channel. Number two, if you're listening to this podcast wherever, whether this is Spotify, Apple Podcasts, number two, I want you to subscribe to this podcast right now so you don't miss a future episode. And then number three, this is probably the most important, leave a review on the podcast. All right, reviews are super important and help the podcast get discovered by other people. So number three, leave a review on the podcast. Thank you so much. I'll see you in the next episode. If you're on the fence about scheduling a publishing consultation call with my team, maybe you're not quite ready for that, I've got some free training that I think will be really helpful for you. All right, all you have to do is go to register to sign up. Go to selfpublishing.com/free training. When you do, you're also going to get a free digital copy of my new book, Published. And on that training, you're going to learn the next step, so how to implement with your book. So how to write, how to publish, how to launch successfully. So go to register right now at selfpublishing.com/free training. I'll see you there.